SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour three, 20 minutes in. So we've got 40 minutes to spend with Nick and with Hammer. And the first and most important question for Nick is, did you get out to the hot bagel shop?
Oh, made it. No concern about that. That was the safest bet of the day, that if it's Friday morning, I'm going to swing by the hot bagel shop. Hot bagel shop is doing a great job of maintaining the mask restrictions and social distancing as we're having a little surge in the coronavirus in Houston, but I commend my good friends from the Northeast that run the hot bagel shop. And everything with a little lock spread. Good way to start the day.
Look at you. I'm very impressed that
I mean, Steve, you know, my parents are from New York, so we have an honorary suffix to our name, and there's been a lot of appreciation for lox and all other Jewish delicacies over the years.
Outstanding. Well, I was kidding. Nick said, oh, good. If I'm coming on late, that gives me time to go to the bagel shop. I said, Houston's the first place I think of when it comes to bagels. And he said, no. Hot bagel shop from Boston, family from Boston. So good job. I love it. That came to Houston. Well, Nick, let's talk New York, and we've got lots to do, but I do want to get your postscript from last weekend. Quick thoughts about Tis the Law, Gamine, No Parole, and anything else.
Well, you know, you couldn't help but be very, I think, taken by the performance by Tis the Law. I thought he ran very, very well. I've seen some, I guess, criticism of him based on him not earning a particularly fast buyer figure. I know you had a conversation with Andy about that earlier in the week, and though that's a good thing. It's a good, healthy thing for people to discuss what they think a figure may have, could have been, or should have been, or anything like that. But the figure makers are all pretty much aligning that it looks like something that should be around 100 in terms of buyer speed figure, and that doesn't preclude Tis the Law from improving substantially in the future and running, you know, a much faster figure. Though the races usually run at a mile and a half, I would say the par buyer figure for the Belmont over the last, I don't know, 10 years or so is probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 100, maybe a little bit higher. So it was by no means a poor performance. He was authoritative in victory, which I think just surprised no one. Manny Franco obviously is growing in terms of confidence on this horse. It's kind of amazing to think that 6 or 7 months ago there was a lot of clamoring to get Manny Franco off of the horse, and now it seems like he's become a perfect fit in the sense that he's obviously learned a little bit about Tis the Law and vice versa, and when you put him in a position like he was in on Saturday, stalking the pace on the outside, he's always going to be very, very tough. You know, I, as loosely connected as I am in various parts of the game, I had heard Gamine was really good prior to her debut, and it's very rare that you get word like that on a Bob Baffert horse and it doesn't pan out, and she's obviously really, really good, so that was just a tremendous performance. And while it was unfortunate that Casual didn't really show up and there really was no competition for Gamine at all, it probably didn't matter who was going to be in that field. I mean, barring Midnight Bizou getting into it somehow, I don't know who was going to give Gamine any kind of challenge based on the way she ran and continues just an incredible run for Bob Baffert's stable in New York. And I mean, as far as the other undercard race go, No Parole was very impressive. Clearly, the track speed looked like it changed as the day went on, so No Parole's speed figure was not all that great. He's a horse that's clearly very dangerous when he's able to get the lead, and we'll see what happens now as he tests a little bit deeper waters in the future. I would imagine looking at a race like the Alan Jerkins in early August at Saratoga, and how about Oleksandra? Just one of the cooler horses around, and I tweeted shortly after her win on Saturday that you seldom see a jockey and horse fit each other better, but Oleksandra's style fits Joel Rosario so well, and Joel Rosario's style fits Oleksandra's style so well. So it's very nice to see, and she was the beneficiary of a big pace setup on Saturday, but you know, she's one of those horses that puts in her run no matter what, and if they fly in front of her, she's got an even better shot, but even if they don't, she's going to give you that good game try.
Fun day, and came off came off very well. And another big weekend is on tap, Nick. Friday analysis I put up early this morning at the website, brought to you by RTN. And for those of you who were frustrated last week that you missed that seventh race, that New York allowance, while NBC was debating changing the Triple Crown spacing, inexplicably. And if you had RTN, you wouldn't have to even deal with this. And you can get RTN for 5 days, get a 5-day trial. There's links on our website. There's links actually inside of Nick's analysis daily. And use RTN BYK. You'll get 5 days for free. Get a feel for it. All the, you know, literally every feed of any kind of racing all over the world. Your head will explode. And we appreciate them providing the Nick's analysis all through Belmont. And for those of you that have already asked, the answer is yes. What is the answer to yes, Nick?
There will be Saratoga analysis in 2020.
But how about that? Turn back the clock!
Big news, first time.
To when everybody co-opted... 4 years they've gone without, and because so many people are gonna be looking forward to Saratoga, even if it's unsure whether they can come and partake in person, you can partake and enjoy Nick's hard work and outstanding opinion. So there will be Saratoga NTAM 1215 analysis. Let's talk about tomorrow and anything today that particularly stood out. By the way, you got a best bet today? Anything that you know you're going to hammer?
You know, it wasn't a card, I think, that had a lot of... The early pick five could get very, very chalky with sub-2-to-1 favorites in every leg. I would say that of the horses early on in the card that I'd be most interested in betting, probably Blue Belt in the fifth. I think he should get a good trip stalking the pace set by Blinded Vision and looks like a bit of a threat. I picked Hannah Smile in the feature. Big class drop. This is a filly that just... 6 furlongs suits her a lot better. This is the right kind of competition, and she was facing much, much tougher last time. I think if you can get her home, if you can use a horse like the JY in the race prior, along with Rinaldi, the logical favorite, then the late pick five becomes pretty interesting. Though there are those favorites early on in the card, it is a good back end to the card in terms of having some price potential. So I would say Hannah Smile in the feature, the JY in the seventh are the two that I'm most interested in late in the card.
Well, let's dive then into Saturday. And, Nick, I suppose we got two ways to do this. Get Thistledown out of the way. Make it easy. Who are you using in the Ohio Derby to start the pick five?
Yeah, fun Ohio Derby. This is a, you know, about what you'd expect in a grade three, but maybe not necessarily the defending two-year-old champion. It's again, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time commenting on small track morning lines, but there's a better chance of me riding Sprawl than Sprawl going off 15-1. He to me looks like the horse that you want to be on in here. That was a compelling performance last time, beating older horses, doing so very authoritatively. He clearly has moved forward from 2 to 3 in some of those races earlier in the year at Gulfstream. One, of course, was on the turf, which doesn't really count, but his next start on the dirt I thought was impressive, and he's clearly moved forward. So I think he's going to be a big focus for me in terms of where my attention goes in this race, and there are a lot of horses that are going to take money that I'm not all that interested in, including, I would say, Rowdy Yates, who's coming back off a pretty lengthy layoff and a trip to Saudi, and you also have a relatively short morning line price on a horse like Lebda, who I guess is a little bit dangerous for Claudio Gonzalez. He does a lot of speed, and we'll see if maybe he can try and bottom them out on the front end, but this looks like a perfect fit for Sprawl, and I'm going to focus on him. I guess you have to use Storm the Court. I'm not really all that wild about him. It's obviously been an ugly 2020, and I don't know really what the expectations for him were coming into this year, but they're taking the blinkers back off. Maybe that's going to make him rate a little bit. It does feel like there's a decent amount of pace, even with Celtic Striker coming out, having won yesterday. So I guess you have to use Storm the Court. I will admit that there are going to be people that want to use Code Runner in this race. Code Runner's last. I make the buyer figures for Lone Star. They hand-timed Code Runner's last race, and it was a very quick pace. You could tell visually that the pace was fast. Code Runner enjoyed a perfect trip up the inside. There's a reasonable chance that his figure could be a little bit higher, so don't burn me at the stake if I end up raising the figure afterwards. I'm hoping that he loses this race by 50 so that I don't have to, but it's one of those where if you think it's going to be a fast pace, you might want to throw him onto your tickets. He's not going to be anywhere near 6-1 on the morning, like he is on the morning line. He should be more like 15 or 20-1. So that's a horse I would say that's worth mentioning. That's probably the extent of where I'll go. I'm really going to try and focus as much as possible on Sproul.
Very good. Let's get to New York. And you know what? The second leg is the True North, so let's go there. And we'll walk through this, and then we'll circle back to the other spots.
Yeah, fun race, and actually, I would say probably the one where I have the most interesting opinion in terms of a lot of the other legs are going to be somewhat chalky. I really like Stan the Man. I think this is an excellent cutback. Obviously, I'm a sucker for cutbacks, and this is a horse who was all over a dead rail last time. That was a much-publicized bad rail on Gotham Day that Lake Avenue also ran on, and while Lake Avenue hasn't come back and really run all that great, she did come back in her next start and run well at Gulfstream. So I think it's a good situation in terms of there being pace for him to run at. Promises Fulfilled should get a little bit of an early battle from Yorkton and potentially Diamond King, given his inside post. And, you know, the thing about this race that you can't help but really focus on is that there are huge knocks on both favorites. Promises Fulfilled did not end 2019 very impressively at all, and quite honestly ran well once last year. And Forense Fire was bad in the Carter. Maybe it was the rail, maybe it was the slop, maybe he deserves one more shot, but that was a very, very poor performance. He really was never competitive at any point, and he really never even picked up the bid. He was sort of hard-ridden right out of the gate and didn't really put forth anything. So I'm gonna use Stan the Man. I'm going to use Diamond King. Of the favorites, I'm a little bit more inclined to use Promises Fulfilled and Forense Fire. I think you have to use both, whether maybe one is a backup and one is a main horse.
Nice. Good. So if we're looking for a price boost, could come here. Third leg, we go to Churchill and the Foster.
It's Tom Zeta's race to lose. I mean, I'd be lying if I wasn't a little concerned about Joel Rosario not being on Tom Zeta. And look, with all due respect to Miguel Mena, you look at Tom Zeta's PPs, and it's pretty clear he's a bit better horse with Rosario. I don't know whether it's a confidence thing or some other component that's at play, but clearly this horse is very comfortable with Rosario, and so he'll have to... He's better than these horses, and I don't want to go on a big anti-By My Standards rant, but the amount of love that there is out there for By My Standards is beyond me. This is a horse that's had two of the softest trips you're ever going to find. Now, that being said, he has a lot of tactical speed. Maybe he's going to find his way into a slightly similar soft spot early, but Pirate's Punch has a lot of speed, and I think Pirate's Punch is going to make By My Standards work a little harder early to keep up with him than he would like to, and I'm going to bet a little bit on Pirate's Punch potentially wiring this field, especially if we see that the main track might be, and the main track at Churchill All Meet has been pretty fair in my opinion. If it's tilted at all towards front end types, then I'm going to throw Pirate's Punch in there. He got an absolutely brutal ride last time, being wide and raiding off of the pace in a race that was won by Endorse, who of course came back and ran a good second in the Westchester. So I think there are some things to like there, and I think you'll get a very strong price on him. So all in all, Tom Zeta's a horse to beat. I think you can kind of use him as a lone A if you need some flexibility later on in the sequence, but at the same time, you have to use Pirate's Punch and By My Standards and a little bit of Owen Dale in some capacity, depending on how much you like them.
Back to New York for the Just a Game, and the three Chads line up in the 4-5-6, and then you got Stormy, Bo Recall, Zofel for Brendan Walsh, who seems to be winning wherever he sends horses of late.
Yeah, poor Regal Glory. She tells her friends that she's a stablemate of Newspaper of Record and Uni, but they don't tell their friends that, it feels like. There's three in here, but they're all talking about, everybody's talking about two of them. And Regal Glory's a nice little horse. She probably is going to end up needing slightly softer competition, but she's a good horse in her own right. You know, I picked Uni. Uni's a horse to beat. There's no question about it, in my opinion. But obviously, it's a tough engagement off the layoff. Chad Brown is 5 for his last 10, bringing turf routers back in great grade ones for what it's worth. So he obviously knows exactly what he's doing, and I think has a pretty decent idea that she's going to be able to compete at this level off of the bench. I don't trust newspaper of record. I know I would love for her to win this race. I think that racing this year would be a lot more fun if she's good. And I do think the Intercontinental was just a terrific performance. But I also think she was helped by a wet turf course. And I don't really think anybody ran based on condition and the way that she just grabbed control of that race right from the start. So I'm inclined to lean towards Uni. And I think the only horse that could potentially upset both of them is Beau Recall. Now, how does Beau Recall win this race over Uni? Uni's going to have to be short. It's just that simple. They have the same running style, basically. But Beau Recall has the advantage of a race off the layoff. She did not have a clean trip at Churchill last time at all. Got buried on the inside a little bit. And Sean Bridgman pretty much had her in hand for most of the last furlong. So simply putting the tack on, getting out there, running that race, I think will help. I remember us talking about that race about a month ago, and I brought up how poor Brad Cox's numbers are with horses coming off of long layoffs and turf routes, especially in graded stakes. He's actually quite a bit better second off the layoff. So I think you'll see a much better performance from Beau Recall. She was a really good second in this race last year behind a Rushing Fall with no pace set up at all. Now, she may have been she was clearly a bit better horse at that point. So I think she's the only one you can trust as a potential upsetter. It should be one of the two main Chads. I lean towards Uni, but I'm not going to be surprised if these two end up hooking up around the eighth pole and battling it out.
Back to Churchill, and the anchor leg is a very deep and well-matched Regret Field.
Yeah, what a race. I mean, this is just outstanding from top to bottom. You have a favorite that's going to be very tough, I would say, in Crystal Cliffs. I've generally tried to be against these types of horses over the years, the ones that come off of the ship in and run big. The thing about Crystal Cliffs that you knew was that she had been in Graham Motion's care for a while, and that was obviously going to work in her favor. And she was very impressive in victory. Didn't really have any kind of trouble trip-wise, and actually had a great trip, but capitalized on it and beat up what looked like a pretty solid field very authoritatively. There's one horse that's going to be a price that I want to mention. Obviously, Harvey's Little Goyle is another one that you want to consider. I'm not wild about the jockey assignment, but this is a horse that was wide and during a period of time where the inside paths on the Aqueduct Turf course were a big advantage in her debut. And granted, she went on to be a bit better horse on dirt. I do think it's notable that Bill Mott's putting her back on the turf. And unfortunately, you'll have to swallow a shorter price than you would like to because these connections just get pounded at the windows. But Harvey's Little Goyle is an obvious win candidate. We all were dying to bet Highland Glory last week, and now, because she's just like her brother Highland Sky, we have nothing but excuses. We wanted to bet Highland Glory because she rallied into a slow pace last time at Gulfstream. So did Stunning Sky. And Stunning Sky was beaten a nose for second by Highland Glory that day. She's now back for Mike Maker, has a leading jockey at the meet, a great inside post, should get some pace to run at. I'm going to use Stunning Sky as well, and if she's 15-1 or so, she's definitely a horse that I'm going to key around in here because there's more to her than a lot of these running lines show. She's had some bad trips, she's had some bad luck, but if things break her way, Mile and an Eighth feels like it's going to be right in her wheelhouse. She's going to be a really good price. So those are the main three I'm going to use to close out the cross-country pick five, and then obviously intra-race. If I can get that kind of price, I'll be on Stunning Sky.
Very nice. Let's go back in New York and look at the first two graded stakes. The Vagrancy, Come Dancing, is going to be 7-5 coming back here. And then you've got 9-5 on Call Me Love. David Aragona, I think, is making that number based on potential pace advantages that the Clement trainee might have under Arad Ortiz. What are we doing in the first two legs of the pick five in New York?
Yeah, I actually think David's off tomorrow, so it's somebody at the DRF is deputizing for him and made this line.
Okay.
Which I thought Mississippi would be favored in this race. I think Mississippi is absolutely the horse to beat, though Call Me Love did obviously get a big buyer figure in her North American debut, running second to Rushing Fall. The first couple of furlongs of this race will really determine what ends up happening at the wire. And that I say that because if Call Me Love shows speed, which she should, she had speed when she ran overseas, and she was within range of a pretty solid early gallop last time in the Bogey, then things are going to be tougher for Mean Mary, and there's going to be enough pace to set up Mississippi. If she does not, then obviously Mean Mary is capable of wiring this field. I just think Mississippi is better than all of these horses. I think that her performances in both the Glens Falls and the Flower Bowl show that she's a better horse. I would never hold the Breeders' Cup against her. She clearly is capable off the layoff, and I think if there's any pace in front of her whatsoever, she's going to win this race. And so as far as the Belmont races themselves go, betting-wise, I'm going to kind of focus on her. And it's a fun spot in that you have a graded stake with two Chad Brown trainees, both of whom look like they have virtually no chance of winning. So both My Sister Nat and Fool's Gold would have to improve immensely, and while I would never say that Chad is incapable of getting a horse like either of these two ready off the layoff, they've just not been good enough. So it's a fun spot in that regard. And speaking of Chad, I picked Royal Charlotte in the Vagrancy. He has very, very good numbers. Obviously, there are a lot of categories where you're going to find very good Chad Brown numbers, but with horses second off the layoff in graded stakes races on the dirt, he actually, from a limited sample, he's had four starters in that category. He's had three wins in the last 5 years, and the one loser actually finished second. Overall, he's 40% with a 268 ROI, second off the layoff, of layoffs of 180-plus days in dirt sprints. So clearly Royal Charlotte needed her last, and I actually thought she ran very well, all things considered. And so I think she'll take a step forward being back on a dry track. Come Dancing's a horse to beat, but, you know, you wonder, when one bad performance, granted that both of her two recent defeats were against much better horses, but when one bad performance is followed by another one off a layoff and a ship and a barn change, and even though it was mainly Carlos Martin's training, there's just a lot going on with this horse, and she does not feel like the mare that we saw win on Travers Day last year anymore. And perhaps she could get back to that, but it seems like a bad gamble at 6-5 or 7-5. If she is that good again, great. Racing's more fun when horses like that are good run well, but I'd be betting. I think it's safe to bet against it.
Nightcap, anchor leg for the New York Pick Five. Sir Chubby jumped out at me.
Sir Chubby had an incredibly wide trip last time. Yeah, he almost tried to cross Island Parkway around the turn and ended up coming up. Ran fourth, just beaten for third. Worth watching that replay. Watch his trip and watch Winning Factor's trip. There was a big part of Winning Factor's trip that was missed early on in the chart, and this horse had just a nightmare go of it. Luis Cardenas, who I think all in all is a above-average apprentice, had a lot go wrong, including clipping heels, and he almost came out of the saddle inside the 16th pole. So though he had a big pace to run at, he had all kinds of things go wrong. I think you have to use Winning Factor. You have to use Sir Chubby based on the wide trip. Bryce is dropping in for a tag off the layoff. Montauk Summer is a firster from Christophe Clément, who does very well with these types and maiden claimers. And then Eagles Palace on the far outside looks like one of the pace players. Really outposted, though, going a mile and a 16th on the inner. So he'll have to work out a trip somehow from out there. I'm going to focus mainly on Winning Factor, Bryce, and Montauk Summer, and probably use the other three logicals as backups.
Very cool. All right, Nick, what are you doing in the first?
Well, I'm going to root for Minute Mouse, but I'm going to use Minute Mouse as a peaceful feeling, I would say. So I think Minute Mouse is drawn very, very well. Obviously, if the inside paths on the inner turf continue to be productive, then I think she'll be in a good spot. And I think betting-wise, we have to be against Sun Summers. Jane Ciabelli, 1-for-21 with a 52-cent ROI in New York the last 5 years. Horses like this have routinely underperformed. And once you get past her, and if you have any kind of negative opinion on Peaceful Feeling, it's a pretty wide-open race.
I thought that's actually, I sent out a note to the partners this morning, and I picked Peaceful Feeling and made Mouse the value. And I thought that Petalite, you know, who was fancied when we faced her 3 weeks ago, Petalite's okay too for Donk in there. Donk is always okay, and he's also got the late runner Sky Kitten as well. David Donk continues to, you know, just plug along and is always worth second and third looks.
I'm a big Dave Donk fan. I think he's a very underrated trainer. I think he's one of those guys that if you started to give Dave Donk some of the stock that some bigger names get, then you'd see him win a lot of races. But yeah, day in and day out, he's got his horses ready to run in all kinds of spots, and I think he does an excellent job.
No doubt. Nick, I appreciate it. And Tam, 1215. Nick Tamaro, everybody. And up at the races, stevebick.com, at the website daily with the Belmont analysis. And it's already up there for you. And I know Andy just sent out the scratches a little bit ago. Nick, good luck this week. We'll talk next week.
Thank you, my friend. Have a good weekend.
Nick Tamaro got 15 minutes. Hammer standing by, and here he is. Good morning.
Good morning. We're back to the normal. Back to cleanup on Friday. We've been there in a while since we shifted. Right.
It's true. It's so, I had to find you all over the country. So
it's fine.
It's just the way
it was fine. But I enjoy it. I enjoy it. It's great. But it's all good, and I enjoyed your. I listened to most of your piece with Jonathan Kitchen the other day, the JK Plus One episode, which you texted me, man, it was 2 hours and 20 minutes. I said, yeah, I don't mind. I think it was 2 hours and 40 minutes, but it's easy to talk. He does a great job of pushing you along and getting you to talk about things you want to talk about. And of course, a lot of your stuff was on food, which of course we realize that. And but that's good, people like to hear that. And it's funny, I got a call. You must have mentioned Roberto's name somewhere in there. Maybe it was yesterday with Haskin. He called me and says, "Oh, geez, I'm now a food guy." It was pretty funny. He got a kick out of that. Of course, we had Frank Miramonte this morning tweeting out that his first stop was at Federici's in Freehold to get a slice of pie, and we would expect nothing less from him, and especially after living in California for 6, 7, 8 months and then being a pizza lover, you don't get too many spots out here, so I can understand his rush to get a nice slice of thin pie out there in Freehold, but... Anyway, pretty funny.
I love it.
But it's all good here. We've switched venues. So Santa Anita has come to a long after a long grinding meet is finally over. And we were on last week, and I said I don't even know who the leading trainer was, but Peter Miller won the meet over Baffert and Baltus, and of course Pratt won the jockey standings over Cedillo and Rispoli. And the owners were the Verona Stable. Congratulations to them, Red Baron and Red Baron's Barn and Paul Rep. So those are the leaders. And I think it was one of those occasions where everyone's happy to be moving on for a little bit. And in this case, moving on is this to Los Alamitos, which begins today. And they'll run... I think 7 days, three days this week and 4 days next week, and then comes Del Mar, which opens a little early, July 10th. So, and actually the Barnier, I think, opened today, so they're starting to accept horses there, and we'll continue down there. Still not sure what the rules are going to be as far as letting who in. No fans for sure, but there was, some talk of trying to get some ownership in there. And, everybody's going to be different. Everybody's going to play it by ear. They're on the tails of the Derby announcing fans, great talk this morning with them about how they're going to handle it and try and handle it. Now, that's 2 months down the road. So, every place, just like people, just like places, everyone has their own rules and abide by them. I've heard a lot of people say, "Oh, no way I'm going here, no way I'm going there." I tell you what, I miss the racetrack. I miss it so much that even the mornings, if they're allowing some people in, I'm going to try and get in. I so miss the atmosphere, and of course, just going and watching the horses and talking to the people there is great. But I sure miss the afternoons and the conversations and the whole everything that makes the racetrack. I sure can't wait till we get back to it. And I was thinking about the Derby. I says, "Well, I'm going to be in Kentucky for Kentucky
right.
Down, so I'll be
That's
in the
right.
area." So guess what? I mean, if I'm 100 miles away and I got a chance to go, if it sounds right, I'll maybe make an attempt. And, you know, it's just like everything. If you get there and you don't feel comfortable, you don't have to go in. You know, that's all. You just, you know, it's just like driving. It's not you you worry about. You worry about the other guy. You know, I'm going to do the right thing. I don't go out of the house without at least a mask around my neck and wear it where appropriate. And you just hope other people respect that and do the same thing. So anyway, happy to hear that. That the Derby's gonna try to get people. Like I told you last week, I got tickets to Bristol at the end of the meet in Tennessee in September. I'm hoping to do that. So I'm jonesing to get outside like everybody else is. So I'll do it if it feels right. If it doesn't, we'll wait until it does. But glad to see some attempts being made, and you know, hope it's just not too premature. But anyway, we're moving on, and the sun's out, and it's summertime here, so that means Del Mar. So let's we'll get ready for them and do a little prep work for them in the next couple of weeks. But like I said, I think I'm happy to get that Santa Anita meet over.
Rick, we've got a little bit of a short session today. We got a little under 10 minutes, and don't know if you heard Jay's comments about the Thistledown mishap with the entry, but you and I talked about it off air the other day afterward, and you had some, obviously, having spent a career in the racing office, you understand the mechanics of how this works. Explain to everybody where things can go wrong, where it could be improved, and what there is to understand about what transpired.
Well, I don't know exactly what happened, but there was some miscommunication. It's not either miscommunication or a mistake was made. And after making a few calls this morning, talking, it was a simple mistake. And those things, I hate to say those things happen. It's scratches. There's a few things in the racing office that scare the heck out of me. On a daily basis. One of them is, and it sounds crazy, so entries and scratches. Scratches were worse. Entries, when I say scary, you take an entry, and in my situation, I'm on the phone, I'm doing this, I got guys in the office, I'm taking an entry. I'm so afraid of not taking it and putting it on the desk where it goes or the pile where it goes. That has happened twice in my career, and I remember them explicitly why. But scratches are a total different animal. And that's why you assign someone in your office, a very responsible person, to handle scratches. And even when you do that, it's a little different situation. They come by phone. They come by assistant trainer. They come by vet. They come by all different ways, and you have to note it, write it down, double check it, get it to the stewards. And there's nothing, every time somebody would phone a scratch, I need to scratch your horse, I would just send them to the stewards. Just keep me out of the middle. I didn't want to forget to write it down. And most tracks, when they do take a scratch, if they don't know the voice, 99% of the people that call you assistants that are when, hey, you got to take me out of here. Just stepped on a rock, whatever it may be. And then you double check it. Oh, you want to take a blue boy out of the fifth race, right? We're taking blue boy out of the fifth. Is that right? You double check it. You write it on the card, take it and give it to the scratch guy or take it into the stewards. And that's for the morning scratches. And then later in the day, another scratch you come in for a different reason. All scratches have to go through the stewards. And there's a scratch time usually at a track, whether it's an official time or a change time, where, the stewards decide who's getting in, getting out, depending on the reasons, who draws into the race, and that thing. And then there's things that happen after that. So at that time, when, let's say it's, 9 o'clock in the morning, the day of the race, when those changes are officially going to be done, and that's done usually the confines of the steward's office, with or without people there, usually the clerk of scales is in there and a few other people, getting the scratches. They go on the scratch board, and they're called out. And by called out means it goes around the track to the people that need to know. The stall office, various other places, then it gets communicated up to the press box and tote takes the horses out and you move along. And then sometime during the morning, someone who's ever assigned will call Equibase and give them the scratches. and they in turn put them on their website, and you move along. So somewhere in that, there's really no shortcuts to doing this. You know, it's all about communication. It's all about you know, it's all about keeping it in a straight line. You don't want 100 people giving them out. You want to give them to one person who distributes them and makes the calls. Mm. And this is done in racetracks all over the country, you know, day in, day out. And in this situation, I don't know when or where, the scratch, a wrong horse, the wrong part of the entry was given as a scratch or written down wrong or taken wrong. And lo and behold, Perry, I mean, didn't get caught, which is amazing. And like I said, in the thousands and hundreds of thousands and millions of races that have been run, it's amazing that, you know, something doesn't happen more often. But that's how conscientious people are.
Rick, and you know, Equibase said that it was an input error. Jay brought up I thought the germane solution, universal solution, doing away with entries completely. How practical is that? Doing away with two-party entries.
One and one A.
Yeah.
I mean, we've done it, and let me tell you, it's a breath of fresh air not having to deal with that. Absolutely. And this just happened to be an entry. It could have happened another way. I think there's another avenue that goes with scratches, and that's reporting them and getting them out in a precise manner. This is driving me nuts. I think it's the racetrack's responsibility to, in a timely manner, whatever time it is, 8, 9, 10, 12, 15, whatever time it is, the scratches need to be given out at that same time every day. So the gambler, the player, the owner, the vet, the van people, everybody knows when they can get the scratches. And I think every racetrack that's willing to run races needs to be responsible for putting their scratches on their own website. And what's happened is, and then Equibase can have it, they can be the master, you know, scratch place. But I think that you as an operator should be responsible for putting your own scratches on your own website and you know, going from there. There's a lot of smaller tracks, Thistledown is one of them. When you go to their website and you dig up where the scratches are, you click on it, it takes you to Equibase. I think you should have your own scratch page and then go to Equibase too. Another thing, they need to be easily read, and they need to be displayed in a way where the person can get up there and read it. Now, and what I mean by that is, if you go to NYRA.com, and for years they've done it very well. If you go to NYRA, one of the few sites that on their front page, when you go to NYRA.com, you just go down a little bit on the front page, right on there, scratches and changes, right where it belongs, right on the front page. You don't have to hunt for it. You click on that, and the way they display them is the way it should be displayed. They list, you know, the track condition, rails at 20 feet, all that stuff at the top. And then they have the list of the scratches, okay? And what I mean by that is, here's the scratches. And if you go to Equibase, the scratches are intermixed with weight changes, track changes, okay? You can't read it. I told you just this morning, if you go on NYRA.com, there's 15 scratches. A lot, most of them are main track only, but they're listed in 15 lines. That same information on Equibase, if you go, I think there's 60-some lines. So the scratches don't stick out in any way. Look at Jimmy Jones, the jockey, is 2 pounds overweight. I don't need to know that in with the scratches. Put them in a different area. Let me see the scratches is basically all I care about. The jock change here or there, that's fine. And so I was actually on the phone this morning with someone from Equibase about how to display their information as part of the problem. They don't even have the word scratches on one of their buttons on their site. And, you know, I'm not knocking them. I told them, I said, I'm going to mention this. So I'm hoping that tracks will think about the display of the information and make it easier for the people to read. And I think that, in a sense, if that information was displayed in a better fashion, somebody might have caught that. Just by it was easier to read. But I mean, you look at some of these.
Yeah.
You look at that. You look at that, and the scratch has the same importance as a 2 pounds over, or the fastest. The track is fast. There's no.
No.
It's always been a thing of mine. At every track I'm at, I'm always down with a web guy. I go, put that on the front page. That should be like the number one button when you go to a site that you're looking for. And so I think.
There we go.
You know, now I've stuck my foot in it, but I think, you know, I'm going to. Might see some improvements on some of the sites with the way the scratches are displayed. And, nothing nefarious happened. It was just one of those things. It's almost like working in the placing stand. I was lucky enough, I worked in the placing stand odd and on, off and on for 10, 15 years, and I got out before I put the wrong number up. It's almost like a number the more you're up there, it's like, you know, and it's like when you scratch a horse. When you're in a placing stand, you have visitors, during that 2 minutes of the race, you say, get out, I need to focus on this and get it right, and then, you know, go back to talking to them. But there's so many
Hammer.
Things, it's amazing some of the, yes, we're out.
We got to go. Got to pull up. And I want to thank Kevin Flannery, Marty McGee, Ed DeRosa, Jay Privman, James Scully, Hammer, and Nick Tamaro. And we'll talk to you on Monday. Have a good weekend, everybody.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.
Developed by Horsemen, HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at HorseBills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice. Voices sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
Of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.